Greetings, GeekWire listeners. This is Kevin Lasota. I'm an occasional guest on the GeekWire podcast, but I'm also the GeekWire photographer and videographer, and I do some web development for the site. And I've got a special interview today for our listeners out there. I'm in a very unique location with a unique individual, with a good friend of mine, Andy Williams. Andy, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hey, everybody. So I am a photographer for my entire life. And for the last 14 years, I've created a company and with two other people, and we've been doing photography expeditions around the world to some of the coolest places on the planet. We call them photo workshops. The name of my company is Munch Workshops. We're here today in Mongolia, Ulaanbaatar, the capital city, in fact, after completing a pretty dang epic 2-week unique photography expedition that I don't think too many people have done before. I think I dragged you through the Western Mongolia countryside in minus 30 degree Fahrenheit temperature for 5 or 6 days as we
followed the sheep and, yep, and the camels.
The purpose of this first trip was to, or this trip was to follow a nomadic family as they moved from their winter to their spring pastures. And well, I could ask you, how did you like it?
I thought it was pretty epic. It is not, I will say, it is a trip that is not for everybody. Using the toilet in the middle of the night at minus 20 degrees and going into a tent that at the beginning of the night was nice and toasty warm, at the end of the night was probably below zero, is not a relaxing vacation, so to speak.
Yeah, but luckily we kept warm and I think we got some fantastic pictures to prove it. It's interesting that we're talking about to GeekWire folks, right? And we're going to talk about technology, but we were just with some people that, you know, the biggest technology they have is a little solar panel that recharges their, I think, you know, 5 generations old Android phone that they use to connect maybe, you know, to
once every two weeks
to the internet, right? Exactly. But it is interesting.
I will say the technology, probably the best technology that the nomadic herders have, it's probably the horse. The horse is versatile, strong, and can handle all those conditions and landscapes that we were in.
And think about its durability since the beginning of time, practically. I mean, Mongolia, if you don't know the history, you should take a look at it. If you want the easy and fun way out, just go to Netflix and watch Marco Polo series on Netflix, but you'll learn a little bit about Genghis Khan and they had nearly almost half the world, right? So quite a big empire.
So let's get into, I thought what would be fun for the listeners of the GeekWire podcast is, you know, you've been teaching photography for many, many years now. And I thought we could get into how, you know, you do a lot of nature photography, a lot of wildlife, a lot of people photography. And, you know, I thought we could get into how people can improve their photography. Not everybody's going to have 2 backpacks worth of professional gear like you and I do. But I think there's a lot of techniques and tips that the average photographer can use to get better pictures.
You know, I'm sitting here with my iPhone next to you and I just took your picture. And made, you know, you're actually a handsome fella.
Got a little bit of a tan out there in the Mongolian wilderness.
Somebody a long time ago said, you know, in response to what's the best camera, it's the one you have with you, right? And we are so fortunate today that we in our, you know, can carry in our pockets an absolutely, unbelievably, full stop, amazing camera that can do so many unbelievable things. It's funny because I'm in the photography business. I'm a professional photographer. I teach photography. I teach photography to people who bring 15 kilos worth of you know, top-end camera gear in the backpacks, you know, traveling halfway around the world. And these are people who are 60, 70, 80, sometimes almost 90 years old, carrying this, you know, massive amount of gear and technology. But in reality, we have in our pockets something that can do a tremendous amount of photography. And I'm always taking pictures with my iPhone. I tell a story. I do a lot of articles for print, and you know, no matter the subject, I'm often able. The editor asks me for 20, 30 pictures, let's say, and in that 20 or 30 pictures, I will include a bunch taken with my phone, and I just let him whatever the editor picks. Right, the editor often, more often than not, will pick photos, many photos taken just with my iPhone, which I find always, you know, very interesting, as I'm the same guy that has, you know, tens of thousands of dollars worth of gear that I'm carrying. And it's true, there are many photos that you can't make unless you have a special camera and a special lens, or a special type of camera, and, you know, a long telephoto lens, and, or, you know, a lot of situations.
A tripod.
Yeah, or a tripod or whatever. But the fact is, today, there's a lot of fun photos that we can make with our iPhones. A great example, whether you do it with the built-in capabilities of an iPhone, I think it's 8, 9, or 10, which that live photos feature. We teach in our workshops, when we get in front of a waterfall, we teach, you know, set up your tripod, put up your expensive camera, put on a filter in front of your camera, which enables us to take a slow exposure in the middle of the day. And that gives, many of you have probably seen photographs where the water in a waterfall, in a still image, it looks like the water's moving. Well, before iPhone and cell phone technology had, camera technology had improved, we would have to set up a tripod, take a long exposure, and if it wasn't dawn or dusk, you would have to put on a filter called a neutral density filter, so that you could force your exposure from whatever daylight exposure it was, 200th of a second, let's say, down to a 10th of a second. Now you can make that water slow down and it looks really beautiful. Well, use your iPhone, take a live photo of that moving water, whether it's a stream coming at you or a waterfall falling in front of you, and then in the iPhone Photos app, just swipe the photo up, and then you'll have three choices of how your picture can look using the live photo, and one of those is long exposure. And you know what? It looks darn near just as good as you can do with an expensive camera. And there, I don't know the name of the softwares, but there's different software cameras you can buy for your Android phones that can do the same thing. I stopped using Android a few years ago, but they have it as well.
Tell me about portrait mode. We were just with a bunch of Kazakh eagle hunters. Yeah. And I know you love portrait mode and taking intimate portraits of people with just the iPhone with some fairly stunning results.
Well, it's funny, when they came out with portrait mode, it was autumn or late fall of 2016, and I was here in Mongolia, and I had just gotten, and I think it was, I'm just thinking back, maybe the iPhone 8 Plus, I forget, whatever. Anyway, it was brand new, portrait mode. And we were on a trip in Western Mongolia with the Kazakh eagle hunters, who are a very small group of folks that carry on traditional ways from thousands of years ago. And so we had a group of 60 eagle hunters with our photo group on a private eagle festival, we called it, where they do various events. Sporting events. It's like a little Olympics for the day, right, for these guys? Okay, well, so I have these 50 guys dressed up in magnificent, you know, traditional wear. And by the way, this is the stuff they wear almost all the time. So it's not like they're putting on the one outfit they wear once a year. No, these guys wear these 5 days a week. It's unusual for them not to be wearing this stuff. Well, so I had 50 eagle hunters, and I didn't have a lot of time. What we did is we asked their permission. We'd like to take their photograph. And they all said yes. And the reason is, you might ask, why do they want their pictures taken? They're very proud people. and they like their story to be told around the world. They like people to know about them. So when we told them that we would invite them into the Gur tent, which was very colorfully decorated with beautiful oriental patterns on the walls and such, we set up a little mini studio area. No lights, no fancy camera, just me and my iPhone. And you should have seen the first guy that we took his picture. I did it in portrait. I was like, I really didn't know I was going to use portrait mode.
Right, right.
But I took the picture, and then I went up to him and showed him the picture. And it was a straight color shot of him. And, you know, his eyes went up open like dinner plates, right? And then I remembered about portrait mode. So I turned the edit button on, and I turned it into this black background portrait mode, which kind of forces a black background and light on the subject of the face of the main subject. Well, he went crazy, like, oh my God, this is really cool. And so he didn't want to leave. So I took him another, I took one more of him.
Right.
Then I got him out, and we had to like then bring these 50 guys in. We didn't have a lot of time. I brought them, by the way, they were bribed into the tent by homemade dumplings that the chef was making, and they loved that. So they would come in, wait their turn, have a dumpling or two, sit down with me, and it was literally 1 minute per guy. And the end result, not only having a lot of fun, was that I had 50 portraits done inside of 1 hour, which I never could have done with my traditional gear. Not only that, they were 50 finished, completed, edited pictures that were quality work.
Right.
I mean, okay, you can argue here and there, right? But they were 50 finished products. And I don't know any technology that has advanced so fast that allows me to do that. Because in the real world, you know, you have studio time, you set up the lights, you put the subject there, you take the picture, and guess what? It doesn't stop there, right? Because we have hours of editing in the digital darkroom, right, to make everything perfect. So that experience a year and a half ago was the top photographic experience of my life. Ever.
The top of your life.
Yes.
And how many years have you been a photographer?
Well, I'm 56, and it's been since I was probably six, so a long time. That whole experience charged me up. It moved me. It was visceral. I was on such a high after doing that, all because of this little thing, you know, that Steve Jobs created so long ago that put all this together in our hands. So the technology, they thought it was just unbelievable.
Yeah.
Now, fast forward, year and a half later, we've been here many times. We make a lot of friends with these Eagle Hunter guys, and we stay close on Facebook, and they see our pictures. And I've had other people in my company, other leaders, take other groups in the meantime, and we've brought them prints. We've made photos for them. This time when I came back, I passed around a slideshow I made of those pictures with music.
Yep.
And we're there with a smaller group, about 20 Eagle Hunters.
But many of the same guys.
But all of them were there the time a year and a half ago. They were all there before.
Yeah.
And for them to see this finished product in the form of a moving slideshow was, you know, they just were, it brought tears to my eyes. I was that excited.
Nice. And I'll be sure to include some of these. If you're listening to the podcast, visit the webpage for the podcast. The photos are fantastic. These Kazakh nomads have kind of a stately, grizzled look to them, given the kind of harsh life that they lead, and the portrait mode just enhances that. You're listening to a special episode of the GeekWire podcast. We're geeking out on photography this week, on location in Mongolia, of all places. I'm GeekWire photographer, videographer, and tech guy behind the scenes, Kevin Lasota, and we'll be right back with more.
Technology moves fast. I need to move faster. WGU's competency-based education puts me in control of how fast I move through my IT degree program. I can accelerate my program by applying what I already know to my courses and focusing on the things I need to learn. Earn a respected accredited degree that propels your career in the IT field. Learn more at wgu.edu/IT Certs Included.
Let's get back to our conversation with photographer and workshop leader Andy Williams, which I recorded on location during a recent photo expedition in Mongolia. I know another thing that you really like is the new HDR mode on the iPhone. So tell folks what it is and how you use it.
Again, it's iPhone specific, but I do know that Samsung and Google Pixel, the top phones, they've all been making really good progress, and they've all been within millimeters of each other, right, in terms of quality. But if you're using an iPhone, the latest kind of versions of iPhone, set it to auto HDR in your settings and don't ever think about it again because it's that good. Used to be we'd say HDR, it's gross, it's crappy done, don't do it. Now you can, I set it on HDR auto and just I never think about it again. So every photo I take out there is using HDR auto with my phone, and it knows it's smart enough to not use it when it doesn't need it.
Right. And so it uses it in scenes where there's very bright sunlight and very dark shadows, and it probably internally takes multiple exposures or does some magic internally to smooth that out so that you can see the details.
Exactly.
Okay, so we've talked about the iPhone. How about location? Folks like you and me go on epic journeys to try to get these epic photos, but in everyday locations, I think there are things that people can do to get better photographs.
There are, and one of the fun things you can do, we were talking just last night at dinner about how there's a lot of different kinds of photography, but there's nature photography of landscape, there's nature photography wildlife, and then there's cultural photography, and there's travel photography, and there's urban architecture photography, there's all this kind of stuff, right? And not everybody can go on some trip to Mongolia. Not everybody wants to sit in an outdoor toilet that looks like an igloo at 30 degrees below zero Fahrenheit at 5:30 in the morning.
So, otherwise known as the lovely place.
Yes, and that is what they call it here, the lovely place. But one of the things I was just thinking about locations, almost everywhere where people are listening to this podcast, almost everybody has a Renaissance fair within their radius of where they live. It's a popular thing these days, right? You can find people dressed up in traditional costume. It's kind of fun. And it's an opportunity for good pictures.
Yeah, Comic-Con is another great one with all the cosplay.
Comic-Con is a great place for photography like this. I think about location and I think about subjects, right? So, but location can be as fun as just exploring your own neighborhood. And honestly, that's the first thing I challenge people to do when they're getting into photography is go out and keep exploring your neighborhood within a 2-mile radius of your home and go down roads you've never gone down before. Explore little vistas that you've never seen before. Look for different things that you've never thought about before. And you'll find that there's many, many photographic opportunities right in your own backyard.
So that's location, where you've located yourself. How about the location of the camera? Because that can make a huge difference in the quality of the photos that you take.
Right. So I think as you guys learn, because we all have a suitcase full of extremely dirty pants, I'm a big fan of getting down low and getting a lower perspective on things. So let's talk about what we were photographing. We were photographing people on horseback, coming at us. And these horses aren't the tall, giant horses that we see on...
They're not Clydesdales.
Yeah, they're not Clydesdales. These are small. These are almost the same kind of size as Icelandic ponies. They're definitely shorter horses than most folks are used to. So if you're standing up and you're, 5-6 feet tall, you're going to be above the eye height of these guys, and you don't want that. You want to match the eye level at least of the subject that you're at. And often, for example, horses galloping, and what a thrill it was to have 25 eagle hunters, galloping at us full tilt, and you're just wondering at the end if they're going to veer off or not. But we were laying on our bellies and shooting these guys coming at us, and that makes them appear so much bigger than they really are, and it makes for a much more dramatic photograph. And this works with almost anything. Try it with your dog. Try it with your cat.
Yeah. I think the key thing is, what is the eye level of your subject? Yeah.
And with technology, you know, today's cameras, not so much it is possible with the iPhone. One thing you might use on your phones, by the way, is the 2-second timer or the 5-second timer on your iPhone or your Android phone. Click it, then put the phone down where the cat is. That way you don't have to lay down there and look through the screen and then push it while it's looking at the cat. So, and just take many pictures like that, and one of them is going to be perfect. Getting down at eye level is important.
Yeah. So let's talk about, some people have more than the iPhone. They may have an SLR that they use on trips. They may be frustrated with it. What are some of the basic things that people can do? It might be an SLR. It might be a smaller pocket camera that is more capable than these smartphones. What are some of the basic tips that somebody... it could help ease some of that frustration that people have when the gear gets more complicated.
It does get more complicated. And honestly, the reason I use my iPhone a lot is it's good enough. It's more than good enough. And it's easy for a lot of my travel photos. We were in a monastery today. We had some exclusive access on the last day of our photo workshop, here in Mongolia. And, The documentary photographs I was taking at the monastery, I took with my iPhone. But then we, as promised, I took you guys into a special monastery, and we had, maybe a dozen monks who were chanting, and we had special permission, read that as we made a donation, which is, okay, I'm fine with that. But we had special permission where we could photograph these monks and record them while they're recording. The video you did is going to be epic, I'm sure. So now we're in a dimly lit monastery, and the phone is not going to perform as well. iPhone will not perform as well as almost any new generation DSLR or mirrorless camera.
Yeah, Sony, Nikon, Canon.
Doesn't matter, right? And it doesn't matter if it's a DSLR or if it's mirrorless or whatever. They're all going to do better indoors in what we call a high ISO situation, which is a darkened building with no flash and no natural light coming in.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that's a good example of where a camera, I don't know, I'll give any of the Canon Rebels or the $1,000 Nikon DSLRs, sort of that $1,000 range.
Right.
Is probably where we're talking. And then there's a bunch of mirrorless cameras that fit that as well. I mean, there's A6000 from Sony is still being sold. It's been out 5 years. It hasn't changed an awful lot. It's almost as good as the two other models of that same family, but it's under $500. And that's with a lens, with a kit lens.
Yeah.
So
it's cheaper than your iPhone.
Right. You can have a fantastic APS-C size sensor, so that's a good question. I'm going to pretend I'm you. Andy, tell our listeners what they should think about when their friend says they should have a full-frame camera. You know what? I'm glad you asked that, Kevin. So you guys out there might, you might see a serious photographer like Kevin, and maybe you run into them and they've got, this fancy, what they call full-frame camera from Nikon or Canon or Sony or somebody. And you might say, oh, I gotta have one of those. And the truth is, you don't have to have one of those.
You can get the quality of the smaller sensor cameras.
Right.
Whether it's APS-C or even the smaller Micro Four Thirds is indistinguishable
to the average human.
Yeah.
The average person will never know.
Even to the trained eye, it's
right.
Difficult.
So if you're looking to up your game, this is another good question that I'll ask for you, to me. Somebody wants to get from an iPhone to a real, to a big boy or big girl camera. What should they get? I think that people should take a really hard look at any of the offerings from Panasonic or Olympus, the newer stuff. That's called a Micro Four Thirds mirrorless. Great functionality, great quality, and a tremendous lens selection. They should look at any of the APS-C offerings from Sony, and there's one, two, three, that's like four. A6000, 6300, 6400, and 6500. And you're splitting hairs from each one. But the lenses, and there's probably 100 different lenses there that will, you know, be a usable in that system. Fuji has another mirrorless, APS-C mirrorless with a bunch of lenses. Canon and Nikon have recently announced and shipped their own APS-C, right? They have an APS-C? No, yes?
They have APS-C in SLRs. They do not have an APS-C in mirrorless.
Okay.
So, full-frame mirrorless.
Okay, I take that back. So just, if you're going to take a look, take a hard look at Micro Four Thirds or at Sony or at Fuji.
Yeah, you can hit one of us up if you really want to know the difference between full-frame. Full-frame has some advantages with lenses, but it also has major disadvantages with price when you start adding up all the gear.
Oh, it's not just that. I mean, it's people often realize, oh, my, you know, I used to have a crop camera, APS-C camera, and I went to a full-frame. My pictures are blurry or not as good or whatever, or softer. There is a requirement to be much more precise when you're shooting full-frame.
Yep.
Everything... Your technique needs to be, you know, all that much better. And there's not a reason, in my opinion, for everybody to be, you know, shooting that. It's fine if you, if you're the kind of person that needs all the pixels possible and you want to have a 42 megapixel Sony A7 R3 or, you know, whatever, I don't know how many in the Nikon Z7. 46 megapixels. You know, by all means, go for it. If you need to dive into an image like that. But again, for most normal human beings who are not professional photographers, if you're just looking to up your game a little bit, it's not needed. Save your money for something else.
Yeah. And actually, I think what can really save your money and improve the pictures is some basic settings. Shutter speed. You know, whether you're photographing an animal or people that are moving or talking, you need to up the shutter speed or learn the modes of your camera. So that, you know, you can capture those images without blur.
Well, we're happy to help folks with that. So munchworkshops.com, we'd love to have you guys on a photo trip with us and introduce you to some of this. And that's true, by the way, I should say, you know, we take people of all skill levels on these trips. So it's not only, people think it's professionals or serious, it's people who love a great experience and people who love to travel. And if you don't have any photographic chops at all, we'll make sure that we fix that by the end of the trip.
Nice. When we come back, our photography picks of the week. Last segment here. Let's do quick picks of the week. I am a listener of your podcast. What's your podcast called again?
Ah, thank you for that. Yes, I do with my good friend Juan Pons. Every 2 weeks, we do a general photography topics podcast called Recompose.photo. Recompose, R-E-C-O-M-P-O-S-E. Find us on Google Play or iTunes.
Yep.
And yeah, we do a pick of the week every week. So
yeah, and so I think the two of us have a pick of the week from our Mongolia trip here. I'll get it started.
Okay.
My pick of the week, I was trying to capture a lot of video on this trip, and I grabbed a new device from DJI, the drone company, called the Osmo Pocket. It is a tiny little device, maybe about the size of a Snickers bar. Has a three-axis gimbal on the top, so you know the camera rotates and keeps itself level no matter how you're moving around or how your subject is moving around. So it'll track the subject with very smooth motion. I was surprised. It's not an expensive device. It's about $350. I was surprised with the results this week. I think it's a winner. It captures a smoothness of video that you can't do with an iPhone, you can't do with an SLR. Even with a dedicated video camera, it would be difficult to replicate this without some more stabilization equipment. And it's discreet. I was walking through the market in Western Mongolia. People didn't even know I was filming, and I was filming these beautiful 4K images nicely stabilized. So that's my pick.
I saw it this week, and I'm going to get one as soon as I get home. So I really liked it, too. So that's a great pick. My pick of the week, so we didn't talk about this, but one of the other types of photography I love doing is aerial photography with a drone.
Right.
And I'm much more of a still photographer with my drone. I consider it to be, you know, a 300-foot tall tripod.
That you can turn and rotate in all directions.
I do take video, of course, but only so that I can hand it over and give it to someone like you to edit it for me, because I'm not really good at that part of things.
Right.
But I love creating images from the air with my, you know, 100 or 300-foot tall tripod. And I had been using a while back one of DJI's small drones called the Mavic Air, and it was good. I liked it for its portability, but it has a really tiny sensor in it, so the image quality, while it was good, wasn't anything special. You couldn't make the, you know,
big prints from it.
It wasn't really super sharp. The resolution wasn't that great. Well, I don't know how long ago it was, 6 months, 7 months, 8 months ago, they came out with the Mavic 2 Pro model, which has a 1-inch sensor in it.
From Hasselblad.
Yep. And the sensor's not made by Hasselblad, but the camera technology is all licensed by Hasselblad. So, okay. Yeah. And Hasselblad owns DJI owns Hasselblad now. Other way around. Anyway, but the thing that got me is this 1-inch sensor. And as soon as I bought one, it's bigger than the Mavic Air. It takes a little more room in my bag, but it's still super portable. You can fly it for 30 minutes on a battery, which is pretty amazing.
And we were flying it in 50-mile-an-hour winds this
50
week.
50-mile-an-hour winds, you know, 20 degrees below zero. It didn't seem to bother this thing at all. It was crazy. Anyway, what blew me away with this when I first used it, and still today, is the quality of the images, the still images that it makes. They're super sharp. The resolution is amazing. And, you know, I can click 100% on the computer and dive right into this image, and it's like, whoa, wow, look at that. So my pick of the week is the DJI Mavic 2 Pro, whatever they call it.
Not the Zoom. They have two models. Yeah. The Zoom doesn't have the 1-inch sensor. It has a smaller sensor on it.
Mavic 2 Pro. That's what I love. So if you want to see some more of that, you could also find my work on my website, which is my name, andywillia.ms. andywillia.ms. Put that in your show notes.
I'll put that in the show notes if you didn't catch that URL. So the two picks, we've got the Osmo Pocket, the DJI Mavic Pro, and I think we've got like a Mongolian feast of some sort that's calling our name right now.
Time to go.
All right, Andy, thanks so much for the tips and tricks. And remind readers again where they can find you.
It's munchworkshops.com, M-U-E-N-C-H, workshops, munchworkshops.com. Thanks.
All right, thanks so much, Andy. Thanks for listening to the GeekWire podcast. I'm photographer Kevin Lasota. You can see my pictures regularly on geekwire.com. and on my website, kevinlasota.photography. If you like this show, be sure to email Todd Bishop and John Cook and tell them that you think I'm a better host and interviewer than the two of them combined. Todd wants me to tell you to be sure to subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast app. Thanks for listening, everybody.